Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting of the 30th of July, 2001. We're going to go ahead and get started. We've got a quorum, so John, I think you said number nine we could get started on, so let's call up that item.
I see Alex Dennis out there. I'm sure he'd love to get this item done. Can you come up, Alex?
Good morning. So this is a referral from Commissioner Gongora to consider implementing a Miami Beach-based vendor preference. I'm not sure if you're aware, but the city had a vendor preference years ago. There were some issues with competition. Competition was being significantly restricted. We had folks from the ABC Florida Association of Builders and Contractors reach out to us and say, look, our firms are saying, our members are saying that they don't want to bid city projects because of the local preference. We did an analysis, and we found that many of the local preference firms that were claiming local preference, what they were doing was they had a very minimal an address in the city to get the preference, but they really had no presence here. It wasn't, you know, that they were actual local firms. We also looked at the number of firms who have BTRs in the city, and there really is a very small pool of firms that can supply goods and services needed by the city. So our recommendation, so in 2014, the local preference was repealed.
Okay, I'm gonna hold you there. I understand that Commissioner Gongora is on the Zoom, and it's his item, so I want to let him come in and good morning, Commissioner. How are you? Can you hear us?
Yes, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Let's go ahead and give you the floor. It's your item, and let you introduce it, and then we'll come back to the room.
Sure. And I apologize because I didn't have a briefing with administration on this item. I'd actually zoomed on for something else. I wasn't aware this was going to be discussed today. I probably should have reviewed the agenda. But in any case, the reason why I placed this item on is because when I was on the commission previously, we did have a Miami Beach-based vendor preference. A number of local businesses reached out to me because they believe that it would incentivize more local companies to bid on work. I think it was something small. I think it was like an extra 5-point bonus if you were a local vendor. I'm not really sure. I haven't seen any analysis in this item to see if it was successful, how many local companies used to bid, why it was repealed in 2014, and what the basis for the repealer was. So other than the little four-line conclusion in the comments I'm hearing this morning, I don't feel like I know enough about this item. So my request would be if we could defer it so that I could meet with administration and better understand their conclusions and bring it back. If I agree with them, I may agree to withdraw it, and if not, I'll press forward another day when I'm more prepared on this item.
Commissioner, I am okay if deferring it. If there's a motion from Commissioner Samuelin, how do you feel about that?
I feel good about it. I will move that we defer the item as the sponsor
requested. I'll second that. The item's deferred until September, the meeting in September. Okay.
Great, and we will schedule time with the commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora, for joining us.
Thank you.
I think there was a request to defer item number five as well.
Yeah.
And also, I'm going to ask, I only have one other item that I actually zoomed in for, which was seven. If that one could come sooner rather than later, I'd appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Gongora, what other item do you have? Is it item seven?
Number seven, mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's call it up.
Because item, I'm not supposed to be involved, so I'll zoom out after this.
Let's call it up. John?
Thank you.
Lisette, you're recognized.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. We are discussing today the South Beach Jazz Festival, South Beach Jazz Festival sponsorship request in the amount of $35,000 with an additional $15,000 for programming. The administration is recommending $20,000 and an agreement with a step down of That is from the 2019 resolution. So the recommendation is $20,000, and we will include the $15,000 request in our Miami Beach On Stage program.
John, I just have a question. I know the $15,000 is already budgeted, I believe, in the $1 million. Do we have the recommended $20,000 budgeted when we finished up what we did last week?
It's not currently included.
Okay. Commissioner Samuelin.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Lisette, it sounds like we're trying to be helpful. This has been a wonderful event. There's a lot of free activities. I believe there's a discount for the paid event. So I just want to see a little bit about what the ask is, how big the difference is. I have heard from some members of the group, they were looking for a little bit more. So I just need to know what the delta is. If it's close, I'm somewhat inclined to try and bridge it. But what do we have in terms of what they want and what we're given?
They want $35,000. We're recommending $20,000, so there's a difference of $15,000. And I am also recommending that they, in the future, go through the special event sponsorship application process.
Okay. So, Commissioner Samuelin, I too spoke with a member, and while the initial request was $35,000, I think they would be happy to receive the funding they got last year of $25,000. And so if we had a motion to recommend that to the commission, I would certainly support that.
That's great. So I'll move it exactly as you said. So I'll move the $25,000. I understand there's another $15,000. I also think it's important that we acknowledge next year they're going to go through our new sponsorship process, and I'll make that motion.
And I'll second that. And, John, so I know we're going to have to – now the next question is how do we proceed to move that to the commission because we're making a recommendation. So would we have to do that on the September 17th meeting? How could you incorporate that in the budget?
Yeah, let me first make a clarification. Are we going to pay for this from the $1 million, or are we going to?
No, the $15,000 comes from the $1 million, and this would be $20,000.
We're not doing the $15,000, correct?
I'm sorry.
Are we doing the $15,000 at all?
The fifteen is already included in the $1 million.
Okay, that's
it's
correct.
Going to be just, okay. Yeah. So yeah, so what we would do is on the first public hearing, any changes that come that are added to the budget, whether they come from the commissioners or committee or even administration, they're disclosed at that first public hearing. So we could mention this, that this was recommended by the committee and put it in there tentatively and then hopefully, you know, get it approved.
Okay, let's show that done then.
Okay. Yeah, just go a ahead, clarification, listen. Please. Are you also approving the five-year agreement moving forward?
I am okay with that, but I don't know how you feel about that. It would be 5 years at the $25,000 a year?
$25,000 with a $5,000 step down.
$25,000 with $5,000 step down every year?
Yes, that's correct.
So I think that was going to be the original plan, but then I think we should defer on the step down at this point, because I think that should be considered as part of the application that they would make in the normal process.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, I think we have someone for the organization. We just approved, I believe,
$25,000
plus the $15,000. Okay. So I think we're good for this year. Lisette was just asking about the five-year agreement. Do you want to give a quick headline, Lori?
Sure. And sorry to be late. I thought I was number 7 and had to drive from North Beach now. I'm not used to that extra mileage. Thank you for having us today. In 2019, which would have been the first year that I had joined the board, I believe the policy at that time was going forward. It was going to, for all the nonprofit special events, going into a step down, and then that policy's changed. Last year we did the 25. We absolutely want to go for the new sponsorship system that's going forward, which just doesn't meet our cycle this year, but we are excited about that and look forward to that process, and we love working with Lisette and her team.
So we Chair's here, so I want to turn their gavel back to him. But we just passed a recommendation for $25,000 for the next fiscal year.
Excellent.
That'll go to the commission in September. We also acknowledge the $5,000 times 3, the 15, which will come out of the $1 million, which is already programmed. So,
excellent.
And so what I would suggest is we wait on the 5-year because right now the administration is talking about a step down 5-year, and I think you would prefer a different. And if you go through the regular cycle and make that request, you may end up with 5-year programmed at 25 or some other amount.
Excellent, because the 5-year actually was never us. The event keeps evolving and growing each year, so we look forward, and we will next January actually apply for the following January.
Okay, so just so you'll know, this committee cannot finalize. We make recommendations, so we've passed a resolution to recommend to the full commission, which will be here in September. So your work is not yet done.
Okay.
Make sure the members of the full commission know of our recommendation, and that item. This item will be on the list of additional adds for the budget for the next fiscal year when we meet again in September.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much. And
have a great day.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chairman, just to thank you so much, we have completed item 5, item 7, and item 9. Item 5, I understand, was deferred.
And Mr. Chair, I think Commissioner Gongora's hand is raised. I don't know if
it was raised, but the guys did such a wonderful job passing the item, I didn't have to say anything, so thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, for joining us. You save it for the September full meeting, and we'll get the Jazz Festival done.
Perfect.
Great. Okay. All right, good morning. You want to go back to the regularly scheduled order of things on the agenda, or is someone here want to take things out of order? I don't have any notice that
number 2 is here. The CDC is here.
Okay, let's do number 2. And I know number 6 they asked us to hold off till about 9:00. So let's do number 2. This is yours, Commissioner Richardson.
So initially, the city asked me to defer the item, and so I don't want to defer it because I just want to get on the record. I know the NBCDC had made a commitment to us to have audit reports by July, and so I'm really, for purposes of discussion today, Mr. Chairman, I only want to find out the status of that. So I told the administration, because I know there's a change in the department leadership there, that we're not going to go into full detail. But if it's okay with you, let's recognize the representative from the Miami Beach CDC and find out the status of the audit reports.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Ahmed Martin, Executive Director of Miami Beach Community Development Corporation. When we, at the earlier meeting, promised to have the audit delivered by July 30th, we were operating on the information that we had at the time from the auditors as a third-party entity. Since that time, we have submitted all internal information from MBCDC to the auditors. At this point, they are now working with external lenders to solicit information to them to confirm and finalize the document. At the end of the day, we spoke to them yesterday, and they did promise by the end of August, so an additional 30 days.
Well, I understand, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the commission, when we had the conversation on Wednesday, has asked the administration to have a meeting with them to see what's there. And so I don't think any other action is required from this committee at this point. We don't have the audits. Of course, it's a disappointment to me because it was a personal commitment to me and to this committee, and I just want that on the record. But you'll have your meeting with the administration and see where we
can also did
forward.
Request a meeting with you as well. We sent an email to Luis because we need more time for the commission to actually digest the trajectory and the financial status.
I'll check. I don't see that meeting request. I talked to one of your board members last night, the day before, so happy to meet. But
great.
I don't have anything else on this, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. Yeah, and I share your concern and frustration. Let's try to get this taken care of one way or the other, especially with the sensitivity around building safety nowadays. We want to make sure that, financials are audited, but, the CDC is fully compliant with all building codes and health codes. So give us that reassurance, please. Don't put us in a tough position.
Mr. Chairman, we also have a representative from the city, and while I told them that I didn't expect them to have anything prepared, I don't know if there's anything else you want to put on the record, we should give you. You're here, so we should give you that opportunity. Is there anything you want to add?
Absolutely. Good morning. Alba Tarre, Office of Housing and Community Services. As we shared with the MBCDC, we are open to having a discussion with them. We have looked over their business plan, and there are some items that we would like further clarification on just to make sure that we're on the same page. As some of the items that they've shared, we just want to make sure that they are feasible and within the regulations of the state and federal guidelines of SHIP, HOME, RDA, and CDBG.
Thank you. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would just ask the CDC, are you going to be available to meet with the city in the month of August?
As soon as possible.
Okay, great. Well, you guys work out a meeting then. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, there is one caller. I'm not sure if it's on this item or a prior item, though.
Yeah, I see someone named Michelle. I don't have your last name. I apologize. Are you calling for this item?
Sorry. Hi. No, I'm just a resident of Miami Beach, and it looked like that we were jumping around in the order, and people were requesting that certain items get heard. So I just wanted to request that item number one get heard sooner rather than later, since I know that there's several people here for it.
Yeah, we're certainly going to get to that one. Just stand by, and I'll call on you when that one comes up. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, I think item number one is going to be a lengthy discussion potentially, so let's see if we can knock off a few of these easier ones. We're moving along quite nicely. How about item number three? Discuss vested employees in Tier B that have been rehired in Tier C. Is this Mike Smith who's going to?
Yeah, Mike Smith's going to handle it. I believe he's via Zoom.
Mike, are you on?
Yeah, I'm on. Oh, sorry. I thought you were calling me.
Okay, I'm sorry. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up. Did you want to speak on this item?
I did want to say something. You know, I should have read your agenda so I would realize all these items that I was interested in. I did want to say something on this one, and I want to confirm that everything I say is okay with legal. This item is about employees that worked in the city in the past and then came back to the city, and the retirement plans don't connect, which is very unusual. That's not how it used to be when I was on the commission before, and not how I understand it to be in other cities. But essentially what happens is, I guess if there's a break in your employment, you don't get to reconnect to your old plan. You essentially have to vest all over again in a new retirement plan, and that's prejudicing certain employees. I understand from staff, because I can't talk to my colleagues, that nobody's wanted to sponsor this. And I think that's because I am one of the people that potentially, although our pensions are based on our minute commission salary, and I think the difference for me would be a couple hundred bucks, for the employees it would be more significant. So I'd like to know, if none of my colleagues wish to sponsor this, if I can just remove myself from consideration for this minute increase in connectivity between my two terms of service. I'm being told I can't connect my two terms of service for my pension, but they are connected for term limits. Can I just remove myself from consideration and sponsor this so the other employees don't get prejudiced by me being in the mix?
So if there was no other sponsor and you wanted to sponsor the item, then you would have a conflict, but we could structure the ordinance so that the draft ordinance would exclude elected officials from being able to be reclassified from Tier C to Tier B. And so with that exclusion, Commissioner, then you would not have a conflict and you could sponsor the item.
Okay. I think for today's purposes, and I'm asking your opinion, I should recuse myself from speaking further since I'm in the mix, see what they do with it. If this doesn't go anywhere, then I guess let me know and I can restructure it in a way that I'm not in it where I could sponsor it. Does that work legally?
That does. It doesn't require a sponsor to be heard at committee, so this conversation is certainly appropriate.
Okay. All right. I think I'm presently on the list, I'm going to remove myself from any further dialogue and we'll see what happens and then maybe I'll bring it back.
Okay. I think Commissioner Samuelin wants.
And I just wanted to say procedurally, depending on the will of this body, if it is, I would certainly be willing to pick the item up if that's necessary just for clarity given the comments made. But I want to start with a couple questions. If Mike is with us, what do other cities typically do in this environment? Is my first question.
Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Please go ahead. I think someone just asked the question.
Hey, Mike. Sorry, did you catch the question? I basically want to understand what other cities do. Sort of what's common practice here?
I haven't surveyed that, Commissioner. The reason you have this is you have several tiers in the pension plan. And when you're hired, you are placed in a particular tier, and this is the first time I've ever seen where there were people that were in multiple tiers.
Could you repeat the last statement? I didn't catch it.
This is the first time that I have seen folks in multiple tiers.
What exactly does that mean to be in multiple tiers?
Okay, we have in the General Employees Pension Plan, you have three tiers. You have tier A, B, and C. And all of our new employees are in Tier C. Everybody since 2010 is in Tier C.
Okay. And I understand there's a potential incremental cost if we were to proceed like this. Could you talk about the efficiencies, the labor intensity of having multiple? That the memo alluded to that, but could you bring that to life, what that looks like?
The memo from the pension board did say that having individuals, they have to manually do the adjustments every year. The annual cost of this is under $60,000 a year. I think Melissa's letter indicated that the total cost over the life of the plan is like $700,000. So it's not a small amount of money over 30 years, but annually it's not a whole lot of money.
And does the administration have a recommendation one way or the other?
We do not. This is something that we did not initiate this. This came from outside our department. That we were talking about it because it's a benefit item. It's really a policy decision for the city commission if you want to do this. Personally, I don't think there's a problem with having individuals who stay with the city, you know, keep the benefit. People who leave and come back, that's the consequence of that action.
Can I add a little to it?
Yeah. Yes, please, John.
Okay. So just to make this a little clearer, so the tiers are the richer tiers are the early tiers. So A, B, C. So everybody since 2010 is C. So what happens is there's a handful of people who had vested service in B, and now they're going to have vested service in C. And so one big difference is that you can retire at 55 if you're B. You retire at 62 if you're C. So what happens is that you start getting one pension potentially at 55, and then there's a whole other thing going to happen when you're 62. And so, administratively, it's probably not that difficult to administer. It's just more on the employee side, more than likely, where you worked at the same employer, yet due to the timing of when a tier was implemented, you kind of have you have two different pensions, essentially, is really what it is. And when you take that $700,000 over 30 years and you divide it by 30, that's $24,000. And I think the commissioner just mentioned he wouldn't be part of it, so it's probably closer to 20 at this point. But anyway, just wanted to kind of flesh it out a little bit so you understood.
Okay, colleagues, this is a tough call. We're not getting a firm recommendation. In the spirit of fairness to our employees, given the numbers, I think my leaning, and I'm going to move the item. I think that I would like to see it consolidated. It's not impacting a whole host of people, but they've had the service, so I feel comfortable given the number John said that I will move it.
I have a couple.
Yeah,
questions.
Go ahead.
Is that all right?
Yeah, please. Yeah, I have a couple concerns, but yeah. please go ahead.
Thank you. John, when we were just talking, you said, and I see it on the discuss vested employees, so are we talking about employees that were
fully vested in Group B before they left? Or what would happen, let's say, if an employee was in the Group B category but didn't invest and they left the city and then came back? Talk about that situation. What happens if, and maybe Mike is here, what happens if an employee was in B, they left? I guess they would have an option. They could have withdrawn their money, or they could have left it there. All right, Mike, can you help me out with this?
You're muted.
We can't hear you.
You're on mute, Mike. Start over.
Still muted.
You hear me now?
Yep. Thank you.
Here we go. If they weren't vested, they'd have to take their money out.
If they were not vested in B, they would...
They were not vested. The only option for them would be to take their money and their contributions.
They can't leave it there. What? So if an employee thought there might be some chance of them coming back in the future, they could not, they don't have the option to leave it there?
That's something that Rick would have to answer.
I don't believe so, because when I left the city, I was here 3 years, I left to go home for 1 year, and I had to get a payout. Right, so I had to start over when I came back. And
well, that raises the question, though, with our colleague, and maybe he can answer the question if he's still here. Is he was with the city in Group B. He left the city because he had a break in service. So was he required to pull out all of his money? So in which case, he would no longer be an interested party.
If he was vested, he wouldn't have to take it out. That's the difference.
But he was only here for a year, I think. Maybe. So that's what I'm trying to understand, if there's a difference between vested and non-vested.
There's definitely a difference. If you're vested, you don't have to remove your money. You can choose to, but you don't have to. Where if you're not vested, you do have to remove your money.
You know, colleagues, I'm not opposed to this, but I just think we need to do some more work on it because we have questions that people are probably going to have to do some research on.
And this is only for, let's include Commissioner Gongora for a moment, it's six people. So we know these folks all vested.
That's the issue.
Yes, they vested in B, and they're
correct.
And they are vested or
the other
vested
folks
in
are vested. Of the folks that other folks other than Commissioner Gongora are vested.
Okay, so they're not being harmed. They have a vested retirement plan in B and C. So why are we doing this? This is for the convenience of the employees or of the administration?
It's not really for convenience. There's a big difference in the benefit that you receive. Number one being when you can retire. You can retire at age 55 if you're in tier B.
Right.
If you're in tier C, like all the newer people, at 62. So a portion of their retirement could be at 55. And then a different pension, really with different level of benefit, they would get in when they're 62. So what this is trying to do is just consolidate it to tier B, where they originally vested, so that it's consistent. And so it is a better benefit than if they're kept separate.
Right, it's a better benefit to them.
Correct.
Yeah, the accrual factor for tier B is 3%, and the accrual factor for tier C is 2.5%.
Yeah, B is a better plan.
Correct.
Right, you retire earlier, and it's better accrual. But I'm trying to figure out, if we don't do this, what happens? Because this is going to cost the city a lot of money, and so why are we doing this? That's why I said it's for the convenience or the benefit of these
employees.
It's
about $20,000.
It's not a benefit to us as a city, because we're going to pay out more by rolling them over to C.
It's about $20,000 a year, approximately, right? So you add it up
over
30 years.
No. It's for all of them.
For all of them, yes.
It basically, if I understand, would allow these employees. Now, I'm a little confused about, because Commissioner Gongora said that he would be affected, but then I think I just heard Mike say that all of these employees are vested except for him. So if he's not vested, then he would not be affected. Maybe he's not conflicted out of this. If he's not.
I'm unclear on it right now. I agree with you. I'm a little bit unclear.
Mr. Chair, if I may, if I heard the numbers right, and the reason I made the motion is I think we're talking six or so people. I heard a 20-something. I did my math. We just gave that money to South Beach Jazz Festival. I said it's $3,000 or $4,000. You know, if you think about someone's salary, $3,000 or $4,000 per employee, these are good long-term employees. I was comfortable. That said, I'm hearing questions. I'm hearing we need to research. I support what Commissioner Richardson said. We need to do a little more digging. John, there's no harm if we bring this back in September with a little more fleshed out. Is anything?
No, no. But I did just get a text from Commissioner Gongora saying he has vested. So I'm not sure what's not clear, I guess, at this point. But if we want to defer it for another month, it's not a problem.
I would like to defer it so we can get answers to these questions and study it some more.
Okay.
I'm fine with the deferral because it's not time sensitive. We'll take it up in September.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Let's do, see if we just get rid of item 4. No, how about item 8? Because that'll be, I think,
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, 8. Good.
Someone from property management here. This is regarding a new lease with, I think they're our current tenant, right? Massage of South Beach, is that our current tenant? Hi.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
This is a very straightforward lease. Basically, Massage Envy, their lease will be expiring at the end of this year. They're desirous to continue being a tenant of ours. They're a stable tenant. And what they have proposed is they're going to be doing $100,000 of enhancements to the facility. And we have done a market study in the area, and the rates that we have come up with are in line with that. So the lease will be for 5 years with two consecutive two-year renewals at the city manager's discretion, and with a 3% escalator for the first 5 years, and then for the subsequent years, a 4% escalator.
So is it your recommendation that the commission adopt this?
Absolutely.
I'll move the item.
Second.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All right, then sort of the last possible easy item is item 4, discuss implementing 10-year vesting for all future employees. And this was my item, which, you know, I wanted to have a discussion about this, colleagues. Currently, as I understand it, you know, our current plan allows, you know, new employees, someone who joins the city, to vest in their, you know, retirement benefits after 5 years. And so, you know, the question I have is that too generous, and what's the cost to the city if we continue that plan and we move to something like a 10-year vesting period? And this would be for new employees, not retroactive to ones that are already with us. And I don't know, Mike, if you're on.
Yeah, this is Mike's item.
Yes. Yeah. Good morning, commissioners.
Yeah.
Good morning.
I mean, and you know what, Mike, I apologize. I don't think you and I had a chance to speak on this. So I don't know if you have scenarios, but, you know, if we were to hire somebody, you know, say, for easy math, $100,000 employee, you know, what does the math look like over the person's life if they vest at 5 years versus 10 years? And you may not have that.
I don't have that handy, but I mean, there was a study done by GRS. We actually did the same study before we started collective bargaining back in 2018, and the results are almost identical. The financial impact barely moves the needle. It goes from 0.02% to a maximum of 0.19% over the 30 years. So it's something that just really doesn't result in a lot of change in the contributions. What I would point out is that with the changes were made back in 2010, there were a number of changes that were made that did move the needle. The age was moved from age 55 to 62 to be eligible for retirement. The multiplier went from 3 to 2.5%. The average monthly earnings calculation was based on went to 5 years from 3 years. The employee's contribution went up from 8 to 10%. The COLA for the pension went down from 2.5 to 1.5. And so the change in the vesting was really the only thing that was really positive for the employees. At the present time, the only group of employees that you could affect immediately would be the unclassified employees. And because all of the bargaining units would have to engage in bargaining with us to change it otherwise. Last contract, police and fire did agree to 10-year vesting, but they didn't do it because of cost savings. They did it for other reasons.
What, Mr. Chairman, if I could add, thank you. Mike, what you just said, fire and police agreed to a change. Is their vesting period longer than 5 years now?
Their vesting period is now 10 years.
Are there any
going
other?
For new employees.
10 years for new employees. So,
new employees.
And do we know what other cities are doing, Mike? I know the state of Florida because I was part of the legislature years ago. The state of Florida was 6 years. Now it's 8 years. State of Florida. What? That's the FRS. What do we know? What other cities are doing?
I did a survey. In fact, in our memo, we did a survey of 31 entities. Six had 5-year vesting. Five had a vesting period which was longer than 5 years, but less than 10 years. Only four had a 10-year vesting period. As you pointed out, the Florida retirement system has an 8-year vesting. And a lot of folks have defined contributions now instead of defined benefit plans.
Yeah.
Are you finished?
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a question of the sponsor. I think you were clear. I just want to make sure I heard it correctly. No current employee would be impacted by this. This is all only prospective for
correct.
New employees. You said that. That's what I thought. Mike, I have two questions for
and
you.
Further clarification, I apologize. So this isn't going to apply to unions because that's a collective bargaining. This is for, call it City Hall employees. And in the scenario that I'm thinking about, you hire somebody at 22 years old to do whatever, they work for 5 years. This is a defined benefit program, right? This is really lucrative, great. That's why, most private companies discontinue them. After 5 years of service, they leave, they vested, and the taxpayers are on the hook, if the market underperforms, whatever happens in the future for that person's life. And so it seems to me that we might want to reexamine this portion of the vesting schedule.
Thank you for that clarification. Mike, could you expand, or John, we're getting in the numbers world, maybe you're going to help us, 0.02% to 0.19, could you bring that to life, just in actual dollars, what that means?
Well, in the GRS report, they have a schedule, and so you can see that in terms of annual dollars, it's a small amount of money. Required contributions, it doesn't really produce any kind of return until like 2037.
So. All right, maybe we take this offline because, you can imagine, like I said, the scenario, you hire a 22-year-old, which we do all the time. They work for us for 5 years. They go somewhere else. I mean, then taxpayers are on the hook for sub-market performance for that person's retirement because this is a defined benefit. So what portion, Mike, of a person's salary is paid out as part of the retirement? Like if I join and I'm, whatever age, but I work for 5 years.
Multiplier is 2.5% per year service, so you have to get to 5 to get anything. So after 5 years, times 2.5%, and it's an average over the last 60 months.
Right.
So that's the formula that's used for the basic retirement.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
you know, this is something I'd like to learn more about. I was struck by the size of the cost of our contribution this year, even though it didn't go up, as it often does. But that's a big topic, so I'm glad you put this forward for us to engage on. And, Mike, I now understand that unions are not within the scope of this. That's what the sponsor just shared. But could you please comment on why did police and fire go to 10? What was the background of that? How did that come about?
I mean, I can't. They're the ones who proposed it. I think they're. I would be speculating if I asked what their motivation was, but it wasn't the cost savings. We had also costed that one out, and there wasn't a lot of savings in that one either. So I really think it had more to do with perhaps having some sort of influence over who the chief would be in the future.
Sorry, are unions best after 10, but are city employees best after 5? All right. So, colleagues, you want to just chew on this and we'll bring it back?
Okay. Yeah, if I could, I would like to bring it back. Can I just ask a couple more questions while we're here? Mike, we talked about the unions, but you mentioned it would be dependent on collective bargaining. So if we were to change this, the city, I guess, would enter into some sort of negotiations with the unions when their contract is up. And so those union contracts could be changed, right?
That's correct. We're actually getting ready to enter into negotiations with two of the unions right now, the CWA and GSAF. Next year, or in the spring, we'll be negotiating with AFSCME. So this is actually something that if you want to have a robust discussion about pension and pension savings, it might be good to have that discussion in an executive session where we can have maybe a little more clarity. But right. I think one of the things that's really important to point out that our pension plan needs to be something that's attractive for purposes of recruitment, because the city of Miami Beach is rather unique in that we do not participate in the Social Security system.
Exactly.
Our pension benefit is the only retirement system that we have.
That was a point that I was going to make. So we have to make sure the pension plan is attractive so we can recruit people, because when they're in our plan, they're not in the Social Security plans, and they're not getting their quarter credits that they need to qualify for Social Security. So, and as Commissioner Ariola mentioned, the scenario of younger people coming and then staying 5 years and a day and then leaving there forever in the defined benefit plan. But the other thing that's happening is because we are not in FRS and we are not part of Social Security, we also find that there are employees that retire from FRS, the county and others, and then at the end of their career, they come to us, and if they stay 5 years, then they qualify for our pension. So if we change that to 10, that could affect our ability to recruit people in their second or third career. You see what I mean? So I do think we need to talk about this a little bit more, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that our pension plan is a good benefit that's going to attract the most highly qualified people here. So I'd be amenable to getting a little bit more information and bringing this back. Maybe 5 years isn't the right, maybe 6 years, or maybe, like I said, the state of Florida had 6 years many years ago and then changed it to 8. So right now the state of Florida program is an 8-year program, vesting. So
yeah. I certainly am amenable to getting more information. And if, as Mike said, if we have upcoming union negotiations, if it makes sense to do an executive session to get a more holistic view, I think it's a topic that warrants the time.
Okay, so we'll bring this back.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay, so we've got item number 1, item number 6, and I was asked to hold off till about 9 o'clock, so Sabrina could get here for item 6. So let's take up item number 1, discussion regarding the project budget and scope of the 72nd Street Community Complex. This is something we discussed on Wednesday a little bit. So, David,
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. To recap where we left off the last time, the administration had proffered three options on how to move forward with this project. Option number one was to continue pursuing an agreement with the first-ranked proposer, the Haskell Company, including issuing parking bonds of approximately $19.4 million and also identifying the remaining funding gap of approximately $17.7 million. Option number two was to terminate negotiations with the Haskell Company and move on to the second-ranked proposer, which would entail not being able to go back to the Haskell Company and moving forward. Option number three is to modify in some form or another the scope of the project, the request for proposals, or some part of the procurement that would necessitate terminating this process and starting all over in a different fashion. At the time, the committee did not officially propose a direction, but the sentiment was to proceed with option one. So at this point, what the administration is recommending is to proceed with option one, with the caveat that the funding is identified before we enter or contemplate entering to any formal agreement with the proposer. And if the funding is not being able to be identified, then moving with option two, as I just described. And with that, I know that John may have some additional information regarding appraisals and the such.
Yeah, I think one of the items that we didn't have information we didn't have at the last budget meeting was the second appraisal of the library site, which is a key component here of potential funding. And so I'd like to ask Liz Miro to just jump up and give us the results of that. I think you're going to be disappointed, and I think we might want to invite the appraisers to maybe come to our next meeting so we can really hear the rationale while we keep the RFP process going, so that we can kind of do those two things at the same time so we don't lose time. But Liz, could you share the results?
Certainly. So good morning again. So when we received the first appraisal from CBRE, all five parcels were valued at $75 million. We did receive $75 million. And the two front parcels were valued at $10.5 million. We received the second appraisal yesterday from Cushman & Wakefield, and they have valued all five assets at $49.5 million. With the first two parcels at $7,300,000. So CBRE said $75 million.
The first two were what?
I'm sorry. So CBRE said the first two parcels are at $10.5 million.
And the latest is $7.3 million. So that's not $17 million. In other words. Right. So I think that's part of what we were hoping for. And also I know that Commissioner Richardson had mentioned, okay, if the other three lots are commit to making those a park, you know, it feels like we're not seeing that, I suppose, in these numbers. And so that's why we may want to invite the appraisers to come and talk about what are the factors, what are we seeing? So we get a kind of a head start on when the RFPs come in, kind of what we could expect.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Thank you. And maybe legal can answer. So, and I do think, Mr. Chairman, that we should have the appraisers come in so we can ask their questions directly. But, you know, one of the scenarios that we asked for is, because I believe that the number is low, but I'm not an appraiser. But we know some of the numbers that have now been offered for the Surfside site, right? $100 million, $110 million, and I don't know exactly how the size of that parcel compares to this, but you know, I've been very clear that I'm only looking at the front two, and I want to leave the back three for green space to continue that park. So, legal, I think I'd asked this question before: is there a way to make a commitment to an offeror that if they bought that land, that the back three would forevermore be green space, because that will change the value. You know, you can't, if you tell somebody that it's going to be green space and then, but you say, well, maybe we think it'll be green space, but then the offeror has the risk that someone's going to put a hotel there or something one day. So is there a way to do that?
Yes, sir, there is. And you did ask that at a prior finance meeting, and we researched it. We could record a declaration of restrictive covenants and a grant of easement dedicating the three parcels that you're referring to for, you know, whatever the purposes are for the benefit of the public and also for the benefit of the Collins fronting lots, and so that would be irrevocable, and would serve to restrict those parcels for whatever the purpose is, whether it's a passive park, open space, whatever purposes you designate.
So when you say it's irrevocable, and that is a difficult word to say, isn't it? Would that mean that a future commission could not change it?
Could not. When you have the burdened parcels and the benefited parcels, then that is right. Going to benefit the owner as well of the Collins fronting lot. So that's how the restrictive covenants would play in and could not be changed.
Because I believe strongly if we did that, that would change the value of those properties. But so I would like to have the appraisers come in so we can ask those questions, but having them come in will not, I think we've already tasked the administration, the commission, to move forward with drafting an RFP so that we could look at it in September. That's what we've agreed upon already, right, John?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to say a couple things that I think I've been pretty clear about, but I absolutely want the project to proceed. It was in the geo bond. The voters voted for it. The voters voted for 50, keep round numbers, 55, 56, something in that range. They didn't vote for a $100 million project. I am very concerned that it's getting too high. I'm not ready to support option one. I know that might have been the sense of the committee. I might see two of my colleagues in one way, so that may be the sense of the committee. It's certainly not a unanimous sense. My concerns are the cost. My concerns are that we do not have funding in place. And I'm really concerned if we start to crowd out other needs. For example, we have a $5 million we need for Collins Park. I won't go down the Byron-Carlisle path because I think I've been pretty clear that's a top priority. I believe I heard from my colleague as recently as Wednesday that our property's been condemned. So I don't want to feel too, like when we look at selling assets, I sort of viewed that as diversification, reallocating assets, reinvestment. I'm open to that. I don't want to do it in a distressed manner because I have to. We have to. So that's giving me some concern. So at this point, I'm not ready to go with option one. Question for legal. Raphael, there's some discussion in the memo about the initial bids. Is there any prohibition on us discussing that at this point?
No. You've awarded to number one, and so the cone is lifted. David?
I mean, we haven't awarded really anything yet. I mean, we're still negotiating, so there is no contractual agreement.
But you
of any
selected number
no,
one right, and authorized negotiation, so correct. that would in terms of the cone is lifted, and it wouldn't apply. The cone never applies in a public meeting.
Okay,
anyway.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the questions that's jumping out, because we have such a significant gap, and maybe someone can give some color. There was a wide, significant discrepancy in some of the bids here, and I think we ended up with the highest one by some $15 million, if I'm reading this right. Could you talk to that, David?
Yes, Commissioner, and you're absolutely correct. The original figure from the Haskell was north of $94 million, whereas the other two proposals were approximately $80 million. At the time of bid. However, this was a mostly qualifications-based procurement. It did have an element of cost, which was factored into the ranking. Nevertheless, the commission still elected to proceed with the number one ranked proposer, which is what we have in front of us. Based on statute, we are not allowed to inquire with the second or third proposers at this time unless we terminate the process with the first ranked. So sure. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that helps. It just struck me because we keep talking about a sizable gap and we happen to pick, and I recall that we made a decision, but now we're seeing the numbers for you. We've got the higher by about $15 million. A couple questions about the library. I just want to confirm the numbers I heard.
Yes.
I heard two different proposals. I think I heard a 75 and a 49.5. Was that for the same total project, appraisals?
That is correct. So that's for the five parcels. CBRE valued those at $75 million.
Right.
And Cushman Wakefield valued those at $49.5 million.
Well, that's quite the spread for that. And then just confirming, maybe to legal, selling all of it requires voter referendum. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's all for now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, for me, I don't care if it's 75 or 49.5 because I'm personally never going to support selling the back three. That's just my opinion. There may be the votes there on the commission to do that, but I'm not going to do it because I feel strongly it should be green space. So the real question is whether there's the will to sell the front two once the new lot. You know, we can sell that and have part of the agreement that the library would still be open and operable until such time as a new library is open. And so I would like us to get the appraisers in to talk about those items. I mean, but the item is already moving forward. What we're talking about is looking for a potential funding source if we stay with option one. So if we're looking for about $18 million, if we were able to get 10 off that, we would look at eight. We've got four other properties that we've already put out there that I think combined would be a total of eight. So I do believe there is a funding source for this. So to the point, and Commissioner Samuelin and I have to sometimes do a little dance with the Byron Carlisle, and that's okay because that's what this process is all about. And I, as I've said, agree it's a priority, not the priority, but a priority as this project is a priority. You know, I feel like if we don't get a project going, and we keep talking about different things. North Beach desperately needs a transformative project. Just one. One will lead to two. With respect to the Byron Carlisle, you know, I asked the question the other day in commission about whether or not we could use any bridge loans on the 72nd, and I was told we cannot because there's already a funding source, and so apparently there is a restriction on the CRA that you cannot use it where there's already a funding. So, but with the Byron Carlisle, there is an opportunity there, and so we should explore that. Now, you know, I, of course, and I don't want to relitigate this and rehash it. I, of course, was very satisfied with the other project. I find it's going to be very, very difficult to do the Byron Carlisle as a standalone facility, I believe. I think it has to be combined with other things like workforce housing and other things. Now the CRA is going to have a certain restricted amount of money for workforce housing. And so I still believe a mixed-use facility is the best way to get the financing for that particular facility. Now, whether or not there's any other retail on the bottom floor, we can talk about all those things. But I believe that the best way to get the financing is mixed use on that facility. And I also think that there's an opportunity to use the bridge loan opportunity. But we can vet that. So having heard everything I've heard today, I will make a motion that we proceed, because I know that we don't have anything on the books. I make a motion that we proceed with number one at this time. We look for the funding source. We've already got that out there. We already have RFPs out there. We've got the RFP in works that we'll put out there. And we have already authorized to list 4 properties. They're not listed for sale. They're listing as an invitation for someone to make us an offer. We don't have to accept that. But we can proceed. I do believe that there is an opportunity for funding if the 2 parcels yield close to 10 or more. I believe it will be more, because if we can grant an easement on the back 3 for green space, I believe it's worth a lot more than 10, but we'll see. But if not, the other 4 parcels that we've talked about, I think will yield in the neighborhood of 7 to 8, and I think we'll have our money. And then at the same time we're doing this, I want to work in the sunshine with Commissioner Samuelin to find ways that we can do the Byron Carlisle, so we'll have 2 transformative projects in North Beach. So that's my motion.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I certainly look forward to working with my colleagues. I would like both projects to move forward at the end of the day. I also agree with you that we should explore CRA funding, including the opportunity. If there's financing, that's something I've brought up also. So I think that's all good. I have a couple voting legal questions, Raphael. To put all 5 parcels, we now understand that needs to go to referendum. How many votes on the dais from the full commission to put that forward to the voters?
So if we're going to do a competitive solicitation, so there's no waiver on a 5-7 vote, it would be 2 readings, public hearings, and it would be a majority vote, and then the voter referendum.
And the voter referendum is at a 50% threshold?
50 plus 1.
Gotcha.
Right.
And then, because Commissioner Richardson was pretty clear, his strong preference is just the Collins Avenue. That's the ones that he is more open to doing, if I heard that right. How many votes are required to do that?
So that would not be a voter referendum, because the Collins fronting lots are not waterfront lots. And that would be that would require planning board approval and a 6-7 vote of the city commission.
Okay, good. That's useful information. I look forward to continuing to work this. I do want to see both projects, but I'm going to be a no on the motion today. I just am incredibly concerned at how big the project's going. We haven't even signed the contract for the design. And you know, I said it before, I'll say it again. I'll take the over on what the actual cost end up. I also, maybe not today because we probably put the time in, you know, there have been some question, would the $100 million be a fully finished, fully built out? Are there any other costs that we should know about as we talk about funding? I don't know if you have a quick thought on that, David, because that has come up as a question.
I do, Commissioner, and just to clarify, this is a design build project. As such, the $85 million guaranteed maximum price is provided, it's exactly that, is a guaranteed maximum cost. So short of any unforeseens or anything that the city may change throughout the process of the project, that in theory should not be any additional cost. As an example, the Collins Park garage that we completed was also a design build project. The project is still well within its guaranteed maximum price, and including the contingency that the commission authorized. So if there are no significant changes to the project during its development, I wouldn't foresee why that number would change.
And that includes a fully finished, fully built out.
That is a fully finished building. The as an example, the library itself, it's almost literally ready to open doors when we're done. All they have to do is bring in books and some things, and there is fully fitted with technology and everything.
Okay, great. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, that's all. What do we pay for the Collins Park garage? Do you remember?
The total out the door number, not total budget, but the GMP for the garage was approximately 22
and
change.
All right, good. I was going to say 20. Yeah, good. Okay.
Chairman, I've got another question, if I could.
Please. And I'm going to second your motion. So.
Oh, okay. Perfect. So, thank you. Back to legal. What would be the process if a commissioner wanted to move forward with designating the back three lots as green space in the future? What would be it? Right now, it's a parking lot, and I think it should remain a parking lot until it's a green space. But what would be involved with this designation that you mentioned to make it where it would forever be green space?
So I think the way it would work would be as part of the transaction for the sale of the Collins fronting lots. And it would just be, you know, one of the agreements that you approve as part of the deal, because you'd want to identify the burden parcels, which would be the waterfront lots that would be, you know, used solely for passive park or open space purposes, and then you want to identify the benefited parcels and the owner thereof, and so it, you know, as part of the transaction, it would make sense to do that. And as I know you're doing the RFP now, that would consider different options, because you could also, someone could say, I want all five lots, and a developer could agree to only to use the FAR from the waterfront lots along the Collins fronting lot. So you could end up with the same result potentially through a development proposal as well. So and that would require a referendum, of course, because if you're going to use FAR from a waterfront lot, referendum would be required.
Okay. And would it matter if we move forward, and I'm not saying that my colleagues would agree with me, I'm just saying, forget if we sell the front two or offer to sell the front two. If we move forward with designating the back three as green space after we're finished with it as a parking lot, would that prevent in the future a developer requesting to use the FAR related to those lots? So do the lots have to be together in order for the developer to request using the FAR from those lots on the front too?
If I understand the question correctly, I think that you could have an easement in place and the restrictive covenants, and then still have a unified development site with a development proposal to subsequently then use the FAR that is associated with that. The FAR doesn't go away. It's still there. You just can't do anything on the property.
Okay. And what would be the process if somebody wanted to move forward with that? Would it be bringing an item to the commission? And how many votes would be required to designate that space as green space?
So that would be a simple resolution and by majority vote.
And so it sounds to me like it would basically be transferring the land to designate it as an official park. Is that what happens? Or
that is an option if that's how you want to go about it. Yes.
All right. Well, I will continue to talk to you about that to find out if there are any issues that would disturb the potential development of the front two if it were designated as park space, and also if that designation can be delayed until after it's no longer a parking lot. So, I mean, I want it to continue to be used as a parking lot until such time as it's not a parking lot, and then be green space until we get this facility built. So I'll continue talking with you on that. So I think the motion has been made and seconded, right?
So, yeah, 2-1.
2-1,
okay. Last item, number 6. So I see Sabrina Cohen here. Who's going to present this? This is to discuss components of the collaboration funding and management agreement between the city and the Sabrina Cohen Foundation for Adaptive Recreation Center. Good morning.
Good
morning, Commissioners. We have spoken a lot about the Sabrina Cohen Foundation project for a few years now, so I want to offer some clarification because we have a new exciting project that's involved with it, with the foundation. We're all aware of the Adaptive Recreation Center. That will be a few years out. The foundation and the city are still working on that. But recently, and commission accepted it, Miami-Dade County gave, for a foundation project, $577,000 for an accessible adaptive park and beach, which would be adjacent where the proposed recreation center is. This is Beachview Park, the city's Beachview Park on 53rd. So what we have to do, although the foundation worked with the county, I believe, for over a year on concepts and secured the funding actually came to the city, and that's why we accepted it as a city. But what we don't have is we have to now formally accept the concept and enter this project into our capital plan so you would direct staff to start working on it. That's component one I'll be talking about today. The second component is the foundation has identified $73,000 so far that they could cover, if needed, project overruns, cost overruns. And then the third thing I'd like to talk to you today is how can we start doing, think of how can we do things differently. The foundation has a tremendous opportunity to raise funds, more so, I think, than this city. And I want to talk to you lastly today about how can we do that, such as naming of the playground. You know, companies, individuals may want to give to this exciting project, both for the park and more so for the Adaptive Recreation Center, through a naming right of the playground or of a butterfly garden. So these are things that typically we haven't done too much as a city, but I believe it's important to bridge the gap, not only for the Adaptive Recreation Center, but how are we going to cover the additional costs of building this beautiful, accessible park? And playground, fitness, which I'll be showing you concepts in a minute. If you don't have any questions at this moment, I'd like the folks in the control room to put the conceptual up on the screen so we can take a look at what we're talking about. Okay, so if you're familiar with Allison Park, right now that we have a fully accessible playground, and that's where Sabrina does her beach days, which are fantastic. Allison Park will always be fully accessible, but we're looking in the future to build a bigger and better accessible playground and park at Beachview, and also relocate her beach days to this park. So this is the concept that the foundation worked with a designer to come out with the playground shade structure. And again, there is a difference between meeting ADA requirements to open a playground and being fully accessible. They are very, very different. This would be a fully accessible playground. Next picture, please. Okay, so this will be another view where you have this beautiful walkway leading out to the beach with a proposed boardwalk or an entry point over the dune and at the dune point. And all this would need to be permitted, of course. This wonderful overlook as you're crossing over the dune where it would almost tee off, where you'd have room for both wheelchairs and the persons with them where they could be viewing the ocean. Because you can't always view the ocean very easily because the dune is in your way. And you'll see there that we've got plenty of shade. There's a butterfly. If you're looking at the walkway, looking towards the ocean, on the left there, that is, a landscape feature, a little maze. We have butterfly gardens and fitness equipment. Final slide, please. And this is just, your basic architectural sketch, which shows you could see the proposed recreation center there on the towards the top left, and then how the park redesign would be. If you accept this concept, we would work this into our capital plan. This would be managed by the Parks and Recreation Department with CIP's assistance as needed. And of course, like I said, we would have to go through permitting, all the necessary state permits, environmental permits, et cetera. Okay, so the first thing is I'd like to talk to you about this concept and see if I get a positive recommendation to the commission to accept this concept and enter it into our capital plan.
Can I ask a question? Before we do that, I just want to ask a question while we've got this. I'm squinting a little bit, so you might, I don't think we can blow it up, but what I'd like to know is there's a surface parking lot there. that. And I know that they're, thank you. They can blow it up. Thank you. So I see proposed site of the Cohen Foundation building. I assume that would be the area. So is there any other part of the surface parking lot that is going to be taken for the entirety of the project?
The footprint of the building, sir?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so when everything's done, that's what we're going to see, right?
That's what we're looking at. Yes.
And the rest of the parking lot will remain?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I think that parking lot is owned by the city.
It is.
Okay, great. Now, I'm not sure how we're structuring the deal. We just got through talking about the 75th Street parking lot. We're not transferring the property, right? So we don't have to, this looks like waterfront, so we don't, on the building, we don't have to go to referendum.
No, this is not a sale or a lease. Actually, what Sabrina is doing is raising money for what will be a city-owned building. It will be part of the Parks and Rec Department inventory and city-owned, so there's no referendum requirement and no further approval requirement because she has the agreement in place with the management agreement after the building is built.
And is there anything about the way this is going to be done that would restrict the use of that parking lot in the future? Let's say in 30 years or 20 years, the city decided they wanted to put a mixed-use building there or either sell the land or build a parking garage instead of having a surface lot in order to have more spaces. Is there anything that we're doing here that would cause that restriction?
I defer to staff on logistics and of the site, but legally, no.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. All right, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Just to recap, if you don't have any more questions about the concept, would love to get at the end of this a motion that accepts this project, and basically staff could start working on it. And again, the other thing would be that any donation we receive has to be received by the full commission. They've already identified up to $73,000. So just to get ahead of the game, as part of the resolution going to commission on this project, we can go ahead and accept that up to $73,000 now.
I have a question. So you mentioned potential naming opportunities.
Yes, sir.
And so I know we have a vendor in the city that so I want to know if any naming opportunities are available related to this project, whether or not that would be in conflict with the contract we have already signed with a vendor to work on naming. Can you speak to that?
I'm going to try my best, and this is where the presentation may turn into a team effort between the foundation and myself. Certainly, I believe that there would have to be some very open and clear communication between the foundation, because the foundation would be leading these efforts. If approved by the commission, by the committee, then the commission, the foundation would be the folks who are going out looking for these donorships, because they would be pledging the money specifically towards the construction of this park and more so the Adaptive Recreation Center. But I certainly wouldn't want to have any conflicts with what the city's efforts are as well. So that is one key thing that we're asking for, is to get authorization to allow the foundation, obviously it would need to be accepted by commission, to go ahead and to be soliciting these namings or however we structure this as a fundraising mechanism. Because what they can't do or shouldn't do is go out and be doing this fundraising campaign and be making maybe false or partially false commitments. Donors want to know, I'm going to give you $1 million, and we have naming of the playground. It's going to be the Smith Playground for X amount of years. So this is where it turns into more of a team presentation.
So good morning, Mr. Urente. So let me ask one more question, and then we'll, if it's okay with the chair, we'll ask Mike to address this, but if someone does offer X amount of dollars for naming, would that then be, that donation would be a contribution to the foundation? Is that money that is eligible in this match that we just, so if somebody says, I'll give you $500,000 to call the butterfly garden, the XYZ butterfly garden, would that $500,000 be eligible for consideration for the up to $2.5 million match program?
I believe the foundation would like it to, but that would be the decision of the commission.
I think that's going to be a tricky one. We're going to have to look at that because depending upon how that would be structured. But good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Commissioner and Mr. Chair. Commissioners Mike Urente Heckler, 801 Arthur Godfrey Road, representing the Sabrina Cohen Foundation. Commissioner, you ask an important and good question, right? Whether or not this conflicts with an existing contract the city has for naming rights of city assets. I just wanted to clarify, and John just put it on the record, but what we would be asking for is your support for a donor recognition program for elements within the park. So I believe the contract you have with an outside third party for naming rights is for naming rights of city buildings, parks, city assets. That's not what we are looking for or asking for. It's not to name the park in its entirety after someone. It's to be able to recognize a donor, for example, by placing a small placard, you know, by the swing set and saying, you know, in recognition of so-and-so. And so it's something that we will take a closer look at, but I don't believe it would conflict with the existing agreement.
So, and if I may, and if it did, we'd go to Spectra and work with them to see if they're amenable to releasing that restriction.
Yeah, so I think we would have to do that because I believe it could potentially be in conflict with our current contract. So, you know, I think it's one thing to put a plaque next to a swing set. I think it's another thing if we're naming a pavilion. So in that case, right now, the agreement we have with Spectra is they have to bring everything to the commission for approval. So if they want to sell the naming rights to the convention center, they're going to have to bring that and get approval on that. In the case of, let's say, the pavilion or the building, there's an opportunity for a donor to have their name on the building. Would that come to the commission for ratification?
Yes, Commissioner, and I would defer to the city attorney, but the code does have a process which we intend to follow. We are required to follow so that once naming opportunities and donors have been identified, it will go through the process, and it requires approval from a naming, you know, committee as well as the commission. So what we are asking for at this point is sort of conceptual approval, so that we know that we have a donor recognition program that we can begin to implement subject to ratification by the city commission and, you know, obviously in accordance with the provisions of your code.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's your item, so what's your dream? And I'm happy to consider a motion. I know that you're not in a position to make a motion, but what would you like to see?
So, I'm you know, strongly inclined to go in this direction. I mean, I think the proposal's exciting, right? I mean, it's a good, well thought out plan. I don't think we have anything to lose in going in this direction. I mean, if we start to build a, you know, if I heard it correctly, this would allow us to start building a capital budget for this. Is that correct?
Correct, and on the capital budget, while I'm here, so there's no surprises later, the $577 from the county will not cover this entire project.
Of course.
We're applying for two grants, $200,000 each. Hopefully we get them. So we're really hoping that some of these...
We would do this over time. Yeah, John? I mean, if we want to go in this direction, we develop a real fully scoped out budget, and each year, because the building's going to still take, obviously, a number of years to put all the money together and then get built. simultaneous with that, we could be building this park.
If we were fully funded for the park, this could be a fairly short project. Other than the overlook by the dune, that may be more complicated. The park itself, the playground, exercise equipment, walkways, landscaping, that's a fairly straightforward
project. So what you're asking today is if we were to approve this, it just basically just sets the wheels in motion.
Yes. You'd be directing the Parks and Recreation Department to get
so, Mr. Chair,
that would be my desire.
Yeah. I'll make a motion that we move forward with this conceptual framework with two things. I want a guarantee that any naming, it doesn't have to be a swing set, but any substantial would have to come to the commission for ratification, because I don't think it would ever happen, but, you know, I don't want the pavilion named after a beer garden or something, right? So I don't think the foundation wants that. And then the second thing is I would like for the foundation to meet with the administration to discuss how these naming right donations would be treated as it relates to the match program the city has adopted, so that we don't have any misunderstandings in the future. I don't want to be getting into a debate about this issue down the road. Let's figure out what the rules are going to be, and we'll honor whatever we come to terms with on that. So with those two items attituded, I would make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to be supporting this. I think this is exciting, a wonderful public-private partnership for an amazing cost. It's the right thing to do, and I think it's going to be amazing for our community. The one thing I'm going to probably add, have we, and this might be directed at Mike and the team, when was the last time we shared plans like this with the community, the affected neighbors? And the specific group I'm talking about is the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association.
Are you speaking of the park or the park plan?
The park.
Commissioner, the park concept is something that is new.
Okay.
And so I don't know. I don't have an answer for
you.
So
I would just like to add to the motion, I think we can never over-engage our community. We can never build more. So as a friendly amendment, I would just request that the organization and the city meet with the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association and share what they did today.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Accept that amendment.
And with that, I'll second the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great. Commissioners.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Exciting stuff. Thank you. All right, I think, colleagues, that concludes today's meeting. All right. I'm sorry. Would you like to come up and speak? Please, come on up. I apologize. And, you know, there's someone who has her hand up on Zoom, Molly Campbell.
Hi, my name's Julie Michael, and I'm a resident of Miami Beach. I live on Sunset Island, too. And I'm very concerned about the news that I just received this week, that the green space on Sunset Island, too, is potentially up for sale.
So,
Let me address that.
Yeah. I got a text from Philip Levine on that. I said, It's not.
No, it's not. Let me speak to that. No. So, and this is what happens in the community. I'm glad you're here, actually, because you're obviously a concerned citizen, right?
Very.
You should be concerned if you think someone's selling it. So what happened is we tasked our property department to identify all parcels of land in the city to get an inventory, right? So they came to this committee and identified that the large green space on Sunset 2 is owned by the city, right? So I asked the question, it must be a park, right? Because I've been over there. I assume it's a beautiful city park.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, that property has never been designated as a park. So it's owned by the city, but it's never been designated as a park, okay? So previously, a few months ago, we looked at that, and I think all three of us said we would never want to sell that land, right? So that property is not on the list for even consideration.
It's not.
For sale. It is not.
It's in
please tell
attempt.
All your neighbors, okay? Now, please tell all your neighbors. Please.
They're okay. All online. Don't worry.
Yeah. So, now the other thing that's interesting, because I've asked legal how we would go about designating it as a park, okay? And so I'm looking at that issue.
Okay.
But I will tell you, and please tell all your neighbors, that could be a potential problem, and I'll tell you why. So what they've told me is that if we take the steps to make it an official park, and you have flood mitigation issues on that island, it might prevent us from doing sustainability projects on a piece of that land. So, for example, let's say in 10 years, as part of our down the road, as part of our sustainability efforts, it's determined that we need a pump station on Sunset Island 2 to protect your property. What they're telling me is that if it's designated a park, it may restrict our ability to put a pump station there if it has official designation. But I'm looking at that issue to see what we did. But there is no desire or will and that to put that property to offer that for sale. And so, but I'm glad you're here asking about it.
Thanks. Just a couple more things. Our collective understanding of the historical nature of the gift of the park to the city was that it was gifted by four owners, and that with the designation, that this was all a long, long time ago, with the designation, or that it was always to be a green space. And so we were also wondering if there had ever been any research into whether that was the case, and if there was any discovery in that process.
So, and I don't think property's here. Property may be here. I don't know if you're prepared to speak on this one. I know that we, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but obviously the parcel was brought to the committee. It was identified as something that's owned and is not designated as park. And so I don't know if we've ever done the research to look back at if whether or not there were covenants on the gift. Have we done that?
So at present, we do have a title search that is being reviewed by legal, and it will identify any restrictions to that asset.
Okay. So what we will do is we'll continue to research that and see if we can find an answer to that question.
I think the residents are very interested in it being designated as a park, because although it sounds like the members of this committee are interested in keeping it as a green space, it's not to say that future committees would also share those same sentiments. And so we want it as protected as such, because my daughter plays in the park almost daily. There are soccer teams that play in the park. You know, there's lots of activity. It's not collectively we thought it was a park. And it sounds like this commission also was surprised by the fact that it wasn't.
I thought it was a park, too.
Yeah.
So let's get some additional information. Like okay. I said, I started talking to legal about designating it as a park, but then someone brought up the idea that it could restrict a sustainability project. So let's get some additional information on that, and then you should talk to your neighbors as well about how they would feel if there's a need 10 or 20 years from now for a pump station and it is designated, and then the law would not allow us to save your property values, you know, with that sort of project. And so that's what I'm looking at right now. But you're right. You know, there are going to be commissions after ours, right, down the road. And so we'll look at that. But there's that item, that property is not on the list for consideration.
If I may, because the commissioner brought up some excellent points, which I'm fully supportive of. And just so you know, because you probably don't have the opportunity to follow each of these details, but that issue about sustainability and park is a real one. When we had a project south of 5th, there had been some discussion of South Point Park. There were legal issues that are raised. So I look forward to hearing the follow-up from my colleague and legal, but it's not just the theoretical conceptual issue. It's one we dealt with in the recent months.
Okay, we understand.
And I'm not going to put you on the spot. We're going to talk about this offline. But there may be a way for us to designate it as a park with a covenant or easement for future sustainability projects so that would be an exception to that designation. We're going to look at all that.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
And if you could give me your contact information, I'd be happy to share
whatever information we have, since we want to look into that and also get back to our commissioners as well.
Yes, and I would invite everyone, if they would like to participate in a future Homeowners Board Association meeting, that I'm a member of the board, and we're all very concerned and very interested in the subject, and so anything that we can do to help further that process, we would be interested in.
Yeah, I mean, can you just make sure that you tell your board and all your homeowners that this is not a property that's up for sale, it's not going to be sold?
So yeah. You stop getting messages?
Yeah. And that we're not putting, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be high-rise condos.
It's annoying because we made it super clear, but we're going to get calls and emails anyway. And it's just, there's no reason to work people up and get them all nervous and scared because it's just a false rumor. So just make sure I told Philip, I said, no, it's absolutely not true.
We actually discussed it here. We
discussed it very, very
clearly.
And
we were all very clear. We didn't want to even offer for sale. And then somehow rumors get out there, and then all of a sudden you're concerned. And if I were a homeowner, I'd be concerned too. But it's a rumor. It's not true.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you. And then there's someone on the line, Molly Campbell, who I don't know if you want to speak about this, Molly.
Hi. This is Molly Campbell. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello? Okay. I own a lot on Island 2 where I plan to build a home and raise my family. And I just wanted to echo the sentiments that Julie presented earlier, that it is a major concern for us. And we want to make sure that, we have daughters that are actually very similar in age, and they do classes 3 times a week in that park. And it would be a shame to lose it. And that was actually a big draw to why I purchased my piece of property, was its proximity to that piece of land.
Great.
So thank you very much for your time and explaining your thoughts on it. We really appreciate it.
Yep. Well, thank you. Okay. Well, colleagues, that's the last item on the agenda. And unless you've got another committee meeting today, we can begin our summer recess for August. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Well done.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you. It's 9:40. It's a great day. Thank you.